Aye.
Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Lattiser?
Here.
Mr. McElroy?
Here.
Mr. Ricks?
Here.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Here.
Eight present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Councilman Howe will introduce our guest that is going to lead us in the Pledge of the Allegiance this evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. So I have the distinct honor of introducing Sophia Cabral. She is 11 years old, a sixth grader at Warwick Veterans Middle School. She is the sixth grade spelling bee champion for the city of Warwick and will be representing... And will be representing the city of Warwick in the sixth grade, March 18th at Lincoln Middle School. Sophia, congratulations. Thank you so much. And if you have anything you want to say, feel free to say it, or it's your duty to lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And our rockets red glare, the balls bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Well, we wish you best of luck in the States, and congratulations on winning the Warwick title. And we look forward to inviting you back when you win the state title, so. Next up this evening is general communications. This is announcements of congratulations, condolences, or community events. I have a few announcements. We have a parking ban this evening, starting at 8:00 p.m. There is distant learning for the schools tomorrow morning as well. On March 22nd, the city of Warwick will be hosting a small business summit. We will have representatives from the federal government, state, and local agencies will be available to speak with and meet directly with small business owners here in Warwick and people interested in doing business in Warwick. There will also be a number of speakers doing workshops on different topics affecting small business owners. This will be from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Sawtooth Building on March 22nd, and more information will be made available as the date gets closer. Are there any other general communications from members of the council at this time? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to executive communications. There are none. Next on the agenda is public comment. So this is the last call. There's a sign-up sheet This, for public comment here, this is to speak on any issue affecting Warwick. If you would like to speak on the zoning change, there's an opportunity to do that later on this evening. And if you would like to speak on the short-term rentals, there's an additional opportunity to speak on that as well. Rule 41, after general communications and prior to the consent calendar, at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council each month, there should be a period of time not to exceed 30 minutes during which citizens may comment about Warwick City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall not exceed 30 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. Each citizen signed up and present shall have not to exceed 5 minutes to speak, provided, however, there is not more than 6 citizens are signed up and present, and the 30 minutes will be split evenly amongst the speakers. Time shall not be transferable among speakers. The topics for comments shall be issues directly affecting city government. City Council members will not respond to questions during public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of the earlier of all speakers concluding their allotted time or 30 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires a unanimous vote of the council. Madam Clerk, do we have anyone who signed up? We have 5 individuals who signed up this evening. The first individual is Robert Cushman.
Thank you, Council President. My comments I want to deal with, I just want to set the record straight. On a conversation on one of Mayor Picozzi's Facebook pages concerning legislation that I passed many years ago eliminating lifetime health care for future elected Warwick politicians. And Councilman Howell put a couple of comments on there that I just need to clarify. And I think the councilman was alluding to the fact that the legislation that I put through was somehow going to benefit myself and exclude me from the lifetime healthcare exclusion, and that's blatantly false. That is not true. The original legislation that I put forward in 2007 was to eliminate lifetime healthcare for everybody in the city because I recognize the problem that we're facing today. We have a $400 million unfunded liability. If that legislation was passed, I could tell you right now we would probably have $100 to $200 million and liabilities eliminated from that. But the point I want to make is that, Councilman, you need to do your homework. That legislation was changed after I was not elected. I put my political career on the line to identify a problem and to try to fix the problem. And I think what you need to do, because I've looked at your commentary where you do oppose lifetime health care for elected officials, and I praise you for that. But you're a seated councilman. You have a chance to do something about it. There's people in this city that are former politicians that are going to get lifetime health care. There's no union contract that governs that. I'm challenging you tonight to put some legislation through to end that once and for all so that those politicians who serve 6 years, 8 years, whatever, when they become 60 years old, they shouldn't get that benefit. You yourself said that. So as a member of the Finance Committee, as someone who's looking to stop this, I challenge you to do something about that and do it. And the time I do have left, the situation where the former council president received health care benefits, once again, the retirement board approved that. You're on the retirement board. We need to stop rubber stamping legislation or things that come before you. You need to start asking questions. There is one, I researched all the ordinances. There's one ordinance in the city that governs the retirement board's decision reflecting health care. And it basically says this, when a council person has to be 60 years old, you got to start asking questions. Because if someone asked the question, when I looked at that agenda that came before the retirement board, and if you start asking questions, I just don't want to see one line that says, Councilman, former this gets this. you should be asking questions about the specific ordinances, the specific times of service that allow that person to get those benefits. And this is another point. There are no ordinances that govern anything else for healthcare. You're absolutely right about that. We just passed a firefighter contract that there's no ordinances that cover the OPEB benefits that are put in that contract. This is the kind of problem we have. We pointed that out during the firefighter contract ratification. There is absolutely not one ordinance that governs how that provision is going to work. And just like now, we have problems with a council person getting a benefit that he shouldn't have received, that the administration approved, that you approved, that the finance director approved, and everybody else just about in the city approved. That shouldn't have happened. And it just proves the point that I said before, and other people. This council needs to stop putting on the agenda, Council President, start writing some ordinances to govern OPEB, because you just have one problem right now with one individual. I guarantee you there's going to be a multitude of problems in the future with firefighters and other people, because we have no policies on how we're governing OPEB. That needs to be done. And Councilman, I'm going to be listening tonight, and hopefully you docket that ordinance to eliminate lifetime health care for those future people who are still eligible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next individual is Rob Cody.
Thank you, Council President. I'd just like to talk a little bit about the fire contract that was passed on January 30th. Do you know that we spent more time speaking about a ridiculous ordinance on yard sales than we did on a $26 million contract? And with one exception, one council person asked pertinent questions, and then he was shot down. In the 20 years I've been coming to council meetings, I've never seen a council member be shut down by the council president for asking pertinent questions. For the second contract in a row, Mr. McAllister, I asked you specific questions, which I'm allowed to do under the Open Meetings Act, and you couldn't answer any of those questions. And one of those questions was a yes-no question. Did you read the contract? And you refused to answer that. That is shameful, because I would expect that when you're going to bid, when you're going to sign off and vote on a $26 million contract, that you have read that contract. So you try to vilify me for asking you pertinent questions. But if you were in the private sector, and I understand you don't have any private sector experience, but the fact of the matter is, in the private sector, you would be obligated to answer those questions and to read that contract, so when you were questioned, that you would know everything about it. But you failed to do that in 2019. And again, and what's more disturbing is you pushed my questions to the administration, who was unable to answer them. The fire chief and the finance director, Mr. Peter Schaefer, couldn't answer how many sick days there were. Although, 2 days prior to that meeting, they sent me that letter through public records access. So you're not doing your homework. You deflect the questions to the administration. They're not voting on the contract. You are. You have an obligation to the taxpayers, not the special interests, to read the contract and understand it. You have illegal language in that contract. I brought it up to Mr. Ricks about the disability, presumed disability. It's illegal. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm sure I'll say it again 3 years from now. But I'll also continue about fuel and how we're spending so much money on fuel. On the one day off I've had in months, I videotaped a city worker for in excess of 3 hours in a dump truck with a diesel engine hiding out in two different places with the engine running for 3 hours, never exiting that car, never exiting the truck, and not doing any work. At any given time, I can video that. I've done it in the past. We've got the ladder truck that goes up to Warwick Neck to get coffee. We had the heavy rescue go up to Warwick Neck to get coffee from over by Post Road, who ran his engine for 30 minutes unattended. I got three phone calls today. Dave's Market, the new engine 8, brand new, left running while the men are shopping, violating the Rhode Island DEM diesel laws. And you guys aren't doing anything about it. It's a pertinent question. You all know that I've filmed this stuff for years. It's worse now than ever, and I will guarantee you this. I've been very gracious about this. I've never mentioned anybody's name or put anybody on camera. I always, when I see this waste, I give the number of the plate or the number of the vehicle. By the way, H41, the dump truck, doesn't even have a license plate on it. Who's checking the vehicles? Nobody's checking the vehicles. But I can tell you this. I will guarantee you that on my next day off, I'll find the same thing. I'll videotape it. And just like yesterday, 16,000 people will watch it, and you need to do something about it. I've never put anyone's face on camera or confronted them, but now I'm going to, because it's gotten worse, and this council just isn't doing anything about it. And we're spending money we have to pay for. I just don't understand. And you would know this if you had any experience in the private practice. Private business doesn't tolerate this. The individual that did that violated the union contract. He violated the Diesel Idling Act for the state of Rhode Island. What do you guys do? No problem. Also, I was very disturbed at the last fire contract meeting, not to regress, two council members videotaped and photographed asleep during the ratification of a $26 million contract. Inexcusable. It's an embarrassment, and you need to step up the plate and learn how to read your contracts.
Thank you. The next speaker is Cindy Wilson.
Cindy Wilson. So I got here at 5 o'clock, and it's not easy to come here. And I wasn't joking when I said my watch told me, my heart was telling me something was wrong. I have a heart monitor on, and it talks to my watch. It's not easy to sit here and talk because Mr. McAllister and Mr. Howe have no respect for the citizens of Warwick, and that's unfortunate. And the fact that we're trying to say, hey, can we quit wasting money, and that makes people angry, I really don't understand. If you really cared about the citizens, why wouldn't that bother you? Why wouldn't you say, hey, let's stop the trucks from running? Let's use Stop and Shop, pick up at the door. I mean, that happened in COVID. Why are we sitting outside for a half hour? But more than that, recently, there was a threatening and very negative letter sent to Mr. Cody that happened to include me and referred to me as the effing slut. It was of a threatening nature. And it's so immature that some firefighter, and we actually know who it is, would write a letter. It was like sixth grade. It was that immature. And it scares me because now, since they named me, if I call the fire department, are they going to come? Are they going to take their time? I noticed you got the police here as soon as Rob spoke out. I told you I might be having a heart attack. I don't see the fire department. So are they going to come rescue me? Are they going to help me if my house burns down? Or are they going to be able to hold a grudge because you guys allow it? Not all of you, Mr. McAllister and Mr. Howe, because you have such disregard for the citizens. It makes you angry that we want to speak up. And I'll give the analogy again. If I went to my husband and said, well, I don't have a husband, but if I went to him and said, I need more money for food, I wouldn't get pissed off if he said, why? I wouldn't get pissed off if he said, are you using coupons? Are you buying name brands? Are you shopping at good stores? I would just say, all right, let's work together. So I don't know why this makes everybody so angry, you know, and honestly, you know, I didn't know my watch would talk to me. This is the first time I've had this on for 3 weeks, the first time it did. So thanks for that, and thanks for the fire department to help me.
Thank you, ma'am. The next speaker is Michael Zarum.
Mr. President, I'm going to relinquish my spot. I'll be speaking later on during the appropriate agenda item for the zoning change. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The final person that signed up is Mr. Fife.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the council. The last time I spoke was at the fireman contract. I just want to say we are not against the firemen. We are against higher taxes, against extreme radical contracts. Also, when I called the mayor that he was talking about the two new high schools, and the people here spoke against that, and people said that you can't build high schools for that price. Rob Cody and Bob Cushman came up with proof that you can't. Bob Cushman is a financial analyst. He does that for a living. And Rob Cody is in construction. He knows his business. The greatest resource the city has is its people. You should tap to the talent of the people, like Rob and Bob. Also, work. Nobody talks about the debt that we're in. Work is $1 billion in debt. Billion would it be, as in Bob. Work is in a financial crisis, and nobody talks about it. We're in a financial crisis. We are in debt because of funded pensions, unfunded pensions, and health care. We're in Councilman Morello was the president. He was talking to the fiduciary, and this was during the budget. And he asked the fiduciary, what is the point of no return? And the fiduciary said, oh, that was 5 years ago. When was Councilman Morello the president? About 4 years ago. So 5 plus 4 is 9 years. 9 years, nothing to pay down to lower the debt. Nothing. We're in a financial crisis. Nobody talks about it. You do business as usual, like nothing's wrong. I talked to Councilman Crowley one time. He's not here now, but when he was. And the only thing he said, we can start borrowing money. That's amazing. So when we can't borrow money, that's why we're going to do something. And it's incredible. Judge Flanagan, thank you. He said that work qualifies for receivership. And that was about 4 years ago or more. And nothing's been done. It gets worse. The community cannot be taxed for more than what the community can afford. Period.
You have 1 minute, Mr. Fife.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up, we're moving to the consent calendar. First up is PCR 21-23, a resolution relative to bids. Can you report finance?
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Lattiser. Go ahead, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Bid 2023-323 Alpha, bid 2023-323 Bravo, bid 2023-323 Charlie, bid 2023-061, bid 2023-062, bid 2023-311, bid 2023-347, bid 2023-375, bid 2023-374, bid 2023-334, bid 2023-024, bid 2023-333, bid 2023-376.
That concludes the bid calendar, Mr. President.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the council that were not asked earlier this evening in the Finance Committee? Okay. Here and now, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action on PCR 21-23.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, consent passes.
Thank you. Consent calendar passes. Councilman Howe, I believe one item has been removed from the consent calendar.
Yes, Mr. President. That was formerly bid 2023-088, repairs to engine 13. That is now PCR 24-23, and the committee recommended to hold.
Okay, we will hold till March 20th. Next up on the agenda is referred business. This is going to be the public hearing. So this is PCO 5-23. An ordinance amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Warwick, 281 Associates. Committee report, land use.
Recommend public hearing.
Second by Councilman Lattiser. All in favor is open public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, good evening, everyone. I just want to go over the format for our public hearings. First, we ask that anyone that is speaking to please speak slowly and clearly to the microphone. We have the stenographer here this evening that's going to record everything. We will have someone present what is before us this evening. Then we will council members will be able to ask questions. Then I will ask members of the public who are here to speak in favor of this project to come up. Then I will ask members of the public speaking against this project to come up and speak. And then I will offer an opportunity for anyone who would like to be heard on this topic this evening. Then it will come back to the council for further discussions. So at this time, is there anyone here to present PCO 5-23?
Good evening, Mr. President, honorable members of the Warwick City Council. For the record, Attorney K. Joseph Shikachi, representing the applicant tonight, 281 Associates, LLC. Before you tonight, honorable members of the City Council, is a request to change the zoning for Plat 246, lots 240, 243, 260, 261, which are currently zoned office and residential A10. It's a mixed-use zoning as it stands today. The request before you tonight is to change all of that land to an A7 PDR overlay zone, which would allow construction of 21 multifamily unit condominiums. With me tonight is Scott Moorhead, the project engineer, Ed Pimenter, our land use expert, Jim Cronin, our traffic expert, Polly Degen, our landscape expert. I am not planning on having anybody testify this evening, only to answer questions from the council or the public. But they're all available here, and they're all briefed. Some of them submitted reports, which I believe have been included in part of the record. Also, the owners, Mr. Chauffeur, Mr. Parasol, of 281 Associates, are also present. I'd like to take the board through a very brief chronological history of this project and bring us to where we are today, and hopefully respectfully ask for a zone change and answer any questions the council may have. This project started about 4 or 5 years ago, pre-COVID, where the developers purchased the property and retained site control, wanted to build a gas station, a car wash, wanted to build a Verizon store and retail operations, a lot of things, went through a lot of reiterations, met with the former administration, former town planner, city planner, went through all different reiterations. None seemed to fit within the use of the comprehensive plan, which called for office and residential on this property. Ultimately, COVID came, retail changed, the market bore and the needs of the community bore additional housing. My clients put together a plan, started the process and wanted to build 30 units of housing there. Did a layout, invested considerable amount of money, had meetings with the now current planning department staff, and it was decided for a whole host of reasons, the property is very unique, to go with 23 units. 23 units was what was applied for by the city. 23 units of what received master plan approvable and a favorable, I believe also unanimous recommendation to the council for a zone change. My clients then began a little bit more due diligence before they came here. They secured wetlands approval. It was a long, arduous task to go through the DEM process. It came back that DEM felt the land could support not 23, but 21 units. That is what is before you tonight, a request for 21 units, two units less than the planning board approved well over a year ago. My clients also, the property is bifurcated with an easement from National Grid at the time, which is now Rhode Island Energy. My clients have secured approval for that as well. And that also helped. We met extensively with the fire department to make sure we had adequate turning radiuses. The request tonight is for 21 units. If we are fortunate to receive this approval this evening and second passage next month, we would then return back to the planning board for yet another public hearing where we would fine-tune the plan regarding state DOT approval, work with the city building inspector regarding access, the city engineer, and Kent County Water. So those would be other approvals that we would have to obtain prior to coming back to the city as, if we receive a favorable zoning request. So this is very consistent with what we're proposing with the surrounding area. All the property behind it is zoned residential. Some of the property on the street is zoned residential. Some of the property across the street is zoned office. This is on the 195 interchange. This is pretty much close to the geographic center of Rhode Island. It's a very convenient on and off ramp to the city. It is very close to Appanag and all the wonderful redevelopments going on there. And also it's just down the street, down 117 toward Route 2. That is the sum and substance of the history. I would open it up to any questions, but I have the planning expert can answer any questions if the board or the council has any questions. The landscape architect, the traffic expert, and the engineer. Obviously, we'll design zero net runoff because that's what you have to do. The law requires it. Nor would this council approve it. We'd make sure all drainage was contained on the property. We would tap into existing water lines from Kent County. We have yet to get that approval, but we would certainly have to do that before the project moved forward. We have received our wetlands approval for the property. It's a property, quite frankly, with challenges. That's why you see the property went from 30 to 23 to hopefully its final number today, which is 21. But this is a great opportunity for housing. We don't really need any new offices. Office is changing. The COVID has changed the dynamics for office and the need for it. We need more housing in the city of Warwick. These would be market rate housing. These are not subsidized. These are not affordable. They are whatever the market rate would bear. But with Kent County Hospital re-energized and the professional staff that work there, this is a great opportunity so people who live close to the hospital can find it. But also this would be housing for anybody and everybody who would purchase a unit. Be happy to answer any questions from the council or provide the team to answer a question that is beyond the scope of my expertise, which is very limited. And answer any questions the public may have as well.
Thank you, sir. Councilman Sinapi.
Howdy. It would be nice to see this area developed. And I only have one question, and it's regarding a comment by Al DeCourt back on the 14th, where he said the units 2A, 2B, and 3A, when exiting from their driveways, want you to back out in a southerly direction and travel north to turn around to egress due to a proposed angle of the driveways. These units should be reconfigured to be 90 degrees as to the travel lane. I just want to know if that's been addressed, and I suspect the answer is yes, because you had stated the fire department was consulted regarding the angles, but checking in anyway.
They have not been addressed yet. They will be addressed at the planning for the next planning board hearing. But we have had numerous consultations with the fire department. Mr. DeCourt raises a very important issue. We'll have our engineers look at it, and we'll address it before we go through the next level of approval.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Councilman Gephardt.
Thank you for your presentation. Much appreciated. I'm recalling that not long ago we approved another. So my question is about traffic. You mentioned that you had done some traffic work. We approved a I think a mixed use or a commercial development just
south of that.
South of that.
It was
that.
The car wash.
That's
car
right.
Wash and some retail, a coffee shop.
That's right. So my question is really in the traffic analysis. Is that development factored in? I know it's not there yet, but I just want to make sure it's
part of
that.
I'll call up Mr. Cronin, and we just happen to have Mr. Cronin here, who also, his company did the traffic analysis for that one, and the same company did the traffic analysis for this one.
Thank you.
So I'll ask Mr. Cronin to come forward, be sworn in. And can you answer the councilman's question regarding traffic? When you did your presentation, your analysis, did you include counts from the proposed development to the south as well as this development? Thank you.
No, we started this probably about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Yeah, the traffic counts were done early in 2019. Oh, sorry.
The clerk's going to, if you
sir,
could just introduce yourself.
Can I get your
yourself.
Name again, please?
What's that?
Your name?
James P. Cronin III. I work for Crossman Engineering.
Okay, thank you. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
So help I do.
God, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, we started this in 2019. We did the original traffic counts. And at the time, I was not aware of any other development going in this area. And it shouldn't make any difference to the results because we have such low traffic volumes. But 21 condominiums is a really good use for this land. This property, because it's such a low traffic volume, you're looking at about 10 trips in the morning, I think 12 trips in the afternoon.
Excuse me, sir, we just got to pause for a second. We had a
sorry,
just a little malfunction there. If you could just go back a couple sentences.
Basically, right, this is a very low traffic generation use. So we feel even if you have a development next door or close to the area, it's not going to make any difference. We're looking at 10 trips in the morning peak, maybe 12 trips on the afternoon peak, entering and exiting both driveways. So it's very, very low traffic volume.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from members of the council? Councilman Ricks.
More of a comment. I reviewed the documents that came with the application. I understand that this is not the end of the process. This is a midpoint, really, in this very long process. I can appreciate how long it takes to get some of these various approvals from DEM, all after going through the planning board process. And next, if this council takes favorable action, going back to the planning board and proceeding with the next steps there. I can also appreciate how we all see a lot of vacant office space, a lot of vacant commercial space, and we all know how hot this housing market is. This housing market is not going to just go away. There's so much need here in the city of Warwick, across the state, as well as all of the national trends. Whether at the national, state, or local level, there just has not been that construction of new residential housing that's been keeping up with demand in the last couple of decades. So I think that a modern townhouse style like this, especially given this location's history. It's been, I don't know how long it's been vacant, but I know that it's been vacant for quite a long time. And I can appreciate from your presentation how other uses don't seem to be quite suitable, and how this development of 21 townhouse style houses, residential dwellings would have a great benefit to that parcel. I can also see the benefit to the city considering the housing shortage. So I wanted to thank you for coming this evening along with the experts to answer our questions.
Thank you, Councilman.
Any other questions from members of the council? Okay. Hearing none, are there any questions? Anyone like to be speak in favor of this project at this time? Are there any members of the public who would like to speak in favor of this project? Come on up to the microphone, sir.
Yeah. Good evening, members of the City Council, members of the public who are here this evening, and Mr. Shikarchi and the applicant. For the record, my name is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Last name is Zarum, it's spelled Z with a Z, like a zebra, Z-A-R-U-M. I am a resident of 139 North Hampton Street in Warwick, Ward 2. I'm here to ask for favorable action tonight at this phase of this application. I'm going to be short, and one of the reasons I'm in favor of it is when I look at land use overall in the city and all the different zones that we have, and each different zoning classification, whether it's industrial or whether it's commercial or whether it's residential or open space, we all ask ourselves, what's the most appropriate land use? That also changes with economic times. My understanding right now is that if you compare office, which I believe this is currently zoned partially for, versus residential, I believe there's a much, much higher demand for residential housing in our city than there is for office space right now. I think to keep things in balance, it'd be appropriate to approve this evening and move it in the direction of the type of residential housing. I also had a conversation with some people in the planning department to go over some of the numbers this afternoon. As far as the density, I had questions on whether it would be too dense. I think most developers like to put as many units in as possible. That has a tendency to get some of our residents upset, and they have a new name for that. They call it crime zoning. But I think that 12 units is very, very reasonable. I don't think it's crime zoning. I think it's very, very appropriate. And I would just support this and ask for favorable action. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there any other members of the public here to speak in favor of this project? Are there any other members of the public here to speak in favor of this project? Are there any members of the public here to speak against this project? Are there any members of the public here to speak against this project? Are there any members of the public here to speak against this project? Are there any members of the public that would like to be heard on this project at this time? Are there any members of the public that would like to be heard on this project? Any members of the public that would like to be heard on this project? Okay, hearing none. Councilman Howell, do you have a motion to close the public hearing?
Move to close public hearing.
Second by Councilman Ricks. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Are there any additional questions or comments from members of the council at this time? Councilman Lattiser.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to put it on the record that I assume as this thing moves forward, and again, keep in mind, you all know I'm a particularly pro-housing individual, that these this particular development, it will comply with and fall in step with the comprehensive plan, any zoning amendments or comprehensive amendments that need to be made, et cetera?
If they are, the project is currently zoned residential and office. We're changing it to all residential. If the planning board or somebody decides along the way we need additional approvals, we'd certainly comply. But honestly, if we needed it, we would have asked for it before. Our analysis and our expert, it's a judgment call, and we relied on the planning department, and we think they made the right call.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm also in favor of this project. I think it takes a lot to make housing, and look at all the steps that you're taking for 21 units. I know you were originally hoping for more than that.
For 30,
but 21 is a good addition, and it's a good location for it. And I'm a big supporter of housing as well. And we see the work that goes into this. So I thank you for bringing that to us this evening. There are no additional questions or comments. We have a motion for favorable action. It's been seconded. I'm looking for a motion. For a motion. Councilman Sinapi, it's in your ward. Would you like to make a motion? Second by Councilman Lattiser, Councilwoman Travis, Councilman Gephardt, Councilman Howe. Any other questions? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sanapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
Eight yes, first passage.
Thank you for first passage.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Next up on the agenda is the unfinished business. First up is PCO 4-22 sub B, committee report land use.
Recommend favorable action.
Okay. At this time, during committee, I know a number of members of the council were able to speak on this. I'd like to open it up to members of the public at this time. Is there anyone here that would like to speak on PCO 4-22? This is the short-term rental ordinance. It's up for second passage. Just please come to the mic and identify yourself for the record.
Good evening, members of the council. Can you hear me? Is that better? Okay. Good evening. My name is Mitchell Edwards. I represent Gregory Hill Realty Trust, RI, and its trustee, William Gagner, on this matter. You've heard from him before, and you've heard from others before. This is my first time appearing before you. And I was here for the committee discussion, and I understand that there was comment about how much time everyone has spent on this ordinance, and my view of it is that it's not about how much time we spend on it, but getting it right. And this ordinance has a lot of problems, and I want to just briefly talk about those. It's our position that this proposed ordinance on short-term rentals violates the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, Rhode Island state law, the building code, and the Rhode Island Fair Housing Act. These violations are pervasive throughout the proposed ordinance. I'll come to some of those and discuss some of those violations today. I don't think I'll have enough time to discuss all of them, but let me cover some. First, the ordinance violates the Equal Protection Clause under the 14th Amendment. The ordinance is treating short-term rental properties different from other dwelling units, such as long-term rental properties, without any rational basis. Rhode Island state law requires that regulations and standards shall be consistent for each land use, type of development, or type of building or structure within a district. The ordinance fails that statute. The Rhode Island Supreme Court has held that the regulated use within an established district must be applicable to all property located within such district so as to avoid that discrimination would be a denial of the equal protection of the laws as guaranteed under the 14th Amendment. So let's take as an example the section 510.4 of the ordinance, which requires the annual inspections of short-term rentals by the building official and the fire marshal. That ordinance does not apply to long-term rentals, only short-term rentals. There's no rational basis for this. There's no difference between a short-term rental and a long-term rental for this purpose, yet the ordinance seeks to impose this requirement only as to short-term rentals. Another example, section 510.8, which sets an arbitrary maximum of occupancy to two persons per bedroom without taking into consideration, for example, families with children. This is another difference between how the ordinance that the city has is different with respect to short-term rentals than the Warwick's building code. For example, the building code states that in every dwelling unit of two or more, in every dwelling unit of two or more rooms, every room occupied for sleeping purposes, a bedroom, by one occupant shall contain at least 70 square feet of floor space, and every room occupied for sleeping purposes by more than one person shall contain at least 40 square feet of floor space for each occupant thereof. That's how Warwick is dealing with bedrooms outside of short-term rentals. But for short-term rentals, you're leaving it to the building inspector with no standard, just up to the building inspector, how they're going to define bedroom and limiting it to the number of people of two. That inconsistency has no rational basis. In addition, there's a First Amendment violation. 510.2G of the proposed ordinance says dwelling units on properties where weddings or other special events are occurring are prohibited. This is, again, a distinction for short-term rentals that doesn't exist for long-term rentals or other use of similar dwelling units. If a short-term rental wanted to have a justice of a peace come into the backyard of a short-term rental that's on the water in a beautiful part of Warwick, where there's four people there to get married or to say their vows, there is no legitimate reason to preclude that just because it happens to be a short-term rental. There's also a First Amendment violation. Fourth Amendment violation. The U.S. Supreme Court has dealt with the issue of the type of information that should be available to city officials under these types of ordinances, the kind of requirement that's in this ordinance. In the city of Los Angeles, California v. Patel, the United States Supreme Court held that a municipal ordinance virtually similar to the ordinance that's being proposed here was unconstitutional under the Fourth Amendment. That does not seem to be factored in to the council's consideration. As the council, I suspect, knows, there's also a Rhode Island General Assembly passed a law that's current law, 42-63.1-14, which encourages short-term rentals and forbids cities, towns, and municipalities from prohibiting short-term rentals. In this particular ordinance that's being proposed for passage, there are prohibitions, for example, in certain zoning districts like GB, even though that district allows for detached single-family dwelling units within it, which includes the type of short-term rental properties that fall within the definition of detached single-family dwelling units. This inconsistency, this disparate treatment, is a clear violation of state law. In addition, the practical effect, the impact that this ordinance will have and the burdens placed on it and the economic hardship that the owners of short-term rentals will incur has the practical effect of prohibiting short-term rentals. I talked a bit about the burden of the inspections, such inspections that are not required in long-term rentals. Those inspections take time away from potential renters, and if people own property, multiple properties, it impacts them economically. Same thing on the bedroom issue that I raised earlier. That limits the number of renters that you can rent to because it has a discriminatory effect on families. Another reason why it impacts the Rhode Island Fair Housing Act and would be a violation. Finally, it's inconsistent, this ordinance, with the City of Warwick's comprehensive plan. The plan sets forth goals for Warwick to continue to develop into a more sustainable, more welcoming community for those who visit and live there. Among the primary goals of the plan were to support the development and sustainability of locally owned businesses, provide incentives for property improvements, improve the business environment, and incorporate neighborhood-based commercial development into the neighborhood planning process. The ordinance does none of these things. And for a litany of reasons, is inconsistent with the plan. So I know it takes time to do these things, but it's more important that we get it right. It's our position and my client's position, certainly, that the ordinance does not get it right. It violates the Constitution. It violates Rhode Island law, and it should not be passed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there any other members of the public that would like to be heard on this issue at this time? Yep. Go ahead.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gerald Galisha. I've spoken once before on this matter. Following him, he kind of said everything that I wanted to say, okay? But there's also the effect that this takes on people like the zoning department. You're putting a lot of inference on them to turn around and keep up with all these inspections, all these terms, a lot of vague language that's up to them to interpret, that we don't have any idea by the ordinance or the amendments that we saw how it's going to affect us. For example, my unit is currently booked through August, okay? If I have to turn around and get it inspected, I'm going to have to try and work with the zoning department or the building department to get them in there. I've already passed a CO. I'm not doing any more work. If I did, I'd have to get a permit. If I got a permit, I'd have to get another CO. I mean, so what are these inspections checking on? I mean, my building was just completely renovated a month ago. We are for an initial inspection. We never had any qualms about that. But these two annual inspections are going to be burdensome, not just on us, but also on the building department. I know when I turned papers into the building department that were time sensitive, it took 3 weeks to get them looked at. That caused me to lose about $2,600 in revenue because I had to stop my building process. Is this going to be more of the same? I mean, there's 73 of us now. I would expect that the number will probably grow over time. And who's going to address that? The only other thing I have to say is to Mr. Sinapi. I know he had said that he received something saying that Mr. Gagne was going to hire an attorney. But this has been going on for 3-4 months. We've asked to be part of the equation for 3-4 months. We sent out many emails. I sent out a few. We've made several calls and got no calls back. I know he did speak to a few people. But on the 9th, at some point in time, we had to play the next card. We can't just walk into an attorney on the 26th of February and say, hey, we need your help. That's all I have to say.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Good evening again, Mr. President, members of the City Council, members of the public who are here. I support the intent of this legislation. I think it's very, very much needed. Once again, for the record, Michael Zarum, Ward 2. Some of you know that before I moved back to Warwick, and I lived in Boston for 20 years, I was a member of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board, not just the Greater Boston Real Estate Board, but also the Rental Housing Association. And with that, I just want to call your attention. I'm looking right now on the Greater Boston Real Estate. Greater Boston Real Estate Board says they do make a distinction between long-term and short-term. So I want to say that I disagree with the first speaker in trying to close the gap between long-term rentals and short-term. I mean, you can go from long-term, you can go to somebody who's been in the home for over 50 years or more in Warwick, to people that rent for a year and need to relocate here for a job for a year, to shorter and shorter term, which might be for vacation in a place like Newport, Rhode Island, or down at the beaches, where things may rent for a week or a month. But you know, the shorter term you go, you start getting more toward a rooming house, and a rooming house is not really consistent with what we have in most neighborhoods. So I also want to mention here, I'm looking at on the Greater Boston Real Estate Board's page, navigate short-term rental market. New laws in Massachusetts regulations were passed. The law H-3454 was an act regulating insuring short-term rentals, governs short-term rentals in Massachusetts. And I want to applaud this council, as well as the people in the planning department and Mr. Kravitz, for trying to move this forward, because I do think it is much needed legislation. not sure if it's there yet, but I do support it moving in the direction it's going. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up, please.
My name is Bob Byrne. I live in Ward 9. You'll have to forgive my misunderstanding or ignorance about this issue, but I wasn't even considering when I was reading this ordinance from the get-go, because there was so much discussion of Airbnb, didn't occur to me that this was really only covering dwelling units, which include cooking and eating facilities. So that does not include something which was considered a traditional B&B, which is everybody has their own bedroom, but the eating area is common, and usually you just get a breakfast in the morning. So I just wanted to ask what the intent was. Was the is that a completely separate issue? Was it because there's no complaints about what the traditional B&Bs are? Why was this made specific only to this ordinance made specifically only toward for something? It's a dwelling unit, but something maybe called handled by Airbnb, but is not really considered a B&B in the strict sense of the word. So it's a point of information. It's just a question I have. I'd like to have clarified if possible.
Sure. There is, just to answer your question, sir, there's for the bed and breakfast, there's already regulations for that. So that's why it's not included in this.
Can I ask where those regulations are? Are they a part of the zoning ordinances as well? Because I only found a couple, one reference to B&B as a definition, a bed and breakfast as a definition, but the regulations would come under what, the lodging laws or something of that nature?
Yeah, we can follow up and get you that information probably through the administration. We'll have that information for you.
All right, thank you.
Are there any additional comments from members of the public at this time on PC04-22 sub B? All right, any additional comments or questions from members of the council? Councilman Gephardt.
So, you know, we've spent our time here working on this ordinance, and, you know, we all went into it with the perspective of we want to get it right. We've heard tonight that maybe there are possible issues. I'm just wondering if we're going to discuss if any of those, you know, do we feel they have merit? Do we feel that this particular ordinance puts us in jeopardy? I am not the attorney here, but certainly don't want to move something forward that could come back to bite us. I'm with Mr. Zarum and others that the intent of this, I think, has landed at where we wanted it. We've had an iterative process, and that's good. But we certainly don't want to, you know, get into some protracted legal battle about provisions that, you know, we passed over in the interest of getting this off of our docket. So I'll put that out there for folks who are smarter than me to opine on, but thought it's worth conversation before we move this.
Where are we going to find anybody smarter than you? Do you have any questions for the solicitor, or just general comments and want to hear from your members in the council?
I'll open it up to the floor. There's a couple hands raised, and then we can certainly loop back to Mr. Walsh.
Sure. Councilman Lattiser, you're the sponsor. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. So in light of the discussions that we've heard this evening, I would address those concerns, if one wants to use that term, by simply saying that this ordinance has been vetted, a proposed ordinance has been vetted frontwards, backwards, sideways, etc. It has been thoroughly reviewed and drafted by our council solicitor. It has been completely reviewed with significant input from Director Kravitz, who has an umpteen years of experience in city planning in dealing with these particular types of regulations. He has had significant input into the drafting of this. And in addition to that, our building official, who has been a building official probably somewhere between 25 and 30 years, has had extensive involvement in the language that is contained in this document this evening. And it is my position that we have done our due diligence. It's been reviewed and crafted by our own city council solicitor. It has been reviewed by three members of this city council who were attorneys. It has been not only reviewed, but to a large degree crafted by our planning director, who has far more experience, I think, than anyone in this room with these type of issues. And also, with regard to the building codes, our building official, Mr. Al DeCourt, I don't know anyone who is more familiar with the building codes than Mr. DeCourt. And he has played a very hands-on role in the crafting of this legislation. So the time is here. We need to pass this. And as we've said countless times, we certainly can monitor it going forward. And if something needs to be addressed or tweaked, we certainly can do that. But at this time, I would like to request favorable action on PCO 4-22 sub B.
Thank you. Councilman Ricks.
I would agree with the attorney presenting on behalf of his client in one respect. As I previously voiced, I see that there is a First Amendment issue when it comes to free exercise of religion, when it comes to specifically the limits on weddings, as a wedding can be performed by a total of five people, and that limit of five people may be well under the total number of occupants that are otherwise allowed. Now, should that event actually occur, then that particular provision would not be enforceable. That doesn't mean that the entire ordinance gets struck down or that it's unenforceable for all other reasons. It's simply a matter of if that particular provision is attempted to be enforced by the city, then that becomes, well, an issue with the enforceability of it. Doesn't mean that the whole rest of the ordinance is unconstitutional. I would say instead that as to all of the other provisions that were brought up, I do see a rational basis for a distinction between long-term and short-term rentals. There are real differences. There are differences between the business model as well as the use. I'm not going to go into a whole long speech on the distinctions. I think that we're all familiar with that. We've had these previous discussions. I also think that there is most definitely a rational basis on the classification of bedrooms. It is within, in my belief, within the building code, and there is not the type of freewheeling discretion given it to the building official that was purported, but instead the building official's decision, of course, has to be rational, and the building official is going to look at the classification of bedrooms based on what the tax assessor is putting forth and based on the definition in the ordinance itself. So I would say if the question is whether there's a rational basis to make these different regulations distinguishing between short-term and long-term rentals, then one should be very careful what they wish for here, because we could always return to looking at all of the rights and obligations under Chapter 3418, the Rhode Island Residential Landlord and Tenant Act. In fact, Section 3418.7 states, this is titled Application, and I'm going to just quote this in full because it's very brief. This chapter applies to, regulates, and determines rights, obligations, and remedies under a rental agreement, wherever made, for a dwelling unit located within this state, period, end quote. This section, it's been in the books for quite some time, since at least 1986, and it has not been amended. And so when you look at principles of statutory construction, the General Assembly, they know how to amend a statute. And so the decision not to amend that statute when adding other statutes specifically to short-term rentals, the courts are going to look and say, okay, well, if the General Assembly wanted to amend that statute, they would have done so. So if the city of Warwick decided that short-term rentals, long-term rentals, all really the same thing, let's subject short-term rentals to the same regulatory regime as long-term rentals, month-to-month rentals, say even week-to-week rentals, which are provided for under Chapter 3418, that comes with a host of not only rights for the landlords, but also responsibilities for the landlords and rights for the tenants. And yes, I use the word tenants because that is what the Rhode Island Residential Landlord and Tenant Act deals with. Now, one might think that, okay, we have rentals for a distinct period of time. And then, just like a hotel, the owner of the property can just have the police come on over and boot the people out if they overstay their welcome. Well, if the occupants are considered tenants, not so much. Then we are looking at Section 341838, eviction for unlawfully holding over after termination or expiration of tenancy. I've had some experience in this area. As a landlord, some of my clients are landlords, some of my clients are tenants. I will say that for the landlords, it is most definitely not a pleasant process to have to go through Section 38. Imagine, if you will, if you were a landlord renting short-term rentals, you expect that folks will be there for a three-day weekend, and then they'll be on their way. And let's say that they're not. And let's say, hypothetically, that they were having to abide by the regulations of the Landlord and Tenant Act. Then, God, it could take weeks. I'm sorry, not weeks, months. It could literally take months, over a month, to effectively get the tenant removed, even though the landlord was only expecting to host them for 3 days. Because now, if we were to treat short-term rentals the same way as long-term rentals, you not only get the good parts of that as a landlord, you also have to take all of the risks of having a tenant. So I think that the ordinance that's drafted, there are some parts that I'm not crazy about. It's a series of compromises, and I think that when it comes down to it, they are rational compromises. I do think that it is that there are some issues here in the ordinance as drafted, sub B, that can be revisited, especially once we get a good sense of how is this actually working on the ground. But I don't think that we should be throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I don't think we should be equating short-term rentals with long-term rentals and throwing together all of those rights and responsibilities that clearly are not suited for either the occupants or for the landlords as being a good compromise. For all of those reasons, I'm going to be continuing to support sub B this evening. Thank you.
Mr. President, I'd like to call the vote, please.
Okay, is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Do we have a second? Second. Any questions or comments on the motion from members of the council? Yeah, is there any additional questions? No, then we can just proceed to the vote then. So, Councilman Latta, sir, do you have a motion?
Make a motion to move the vote.
For a motion for favorable action.
For favorable action on PCO 4-22 sub B.
Second by Councilwoman Travis. Councilman Ricks.
Mr. President, if anyone would like to sign on as a co-sponsor, I would be very happy to have that.
Okay. All right. With no additional questions or comments, it's been moved and seconded for favorable action. The clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Ms. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Latta?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, second passage.
Thank you. Second passage for PCO 4-22 sub B.
Mr. President, may I just make a brief comment?
Yep. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to thank all my members, my colleagues on the City Council, our Council Solicitor, Councilwoman Travis for co-sponsoring, our Council Liaison for all the efforts she's put into this, our Planning Director, our Al DeCourt, our Building Official, members of the public, both for and opposed in getting this done. It's been a huge effort by a very large group of people who played a significant role in this. And also thank you to my colleagues on the council for their amendments as well. So, Mr. President, I'd just like to thank everyone for the support on this. And I think we've got us a really good piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. We're now moving on to new business. First up is PCO 18-22. That's going to be held until March 20th. Next up is PCR 20-23, Committee Report Finance.
Favorable action.
For action, Councilman Howe.
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Lattiser. This is for your crosswalk, correct?
Yes, it is. Howe? Yes, it is, Council President.
All right. Any additional questions or comments? Councilman Lattiser.
President, through the President to the Chair, does this include my crosswalk at St. Kevin's?
Sadly, I have to say no. No, I have to answer that no, Councilman.
I'm a holy fool. I just thought I'd throw it out there again for recognition.
Any additional questions or comments? Hearing none, clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Latta?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
8 yes, motion passes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Thank you.
We're now moving to unanimous consent. Ward 2, anything under unanimous consent?
Pass.
Ward 3. Pass. Ward 4.
Pass.
Ward 5.
Pass.
Ward 6.
Pass.
Ward 7 passes. Ward 8.
Pass.
Ward 9. Councilwoman Travis.
If there be no further business to this honorable body, I move to a docket session.
All those in favor of the docket session say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? We are now in the docket session. Ward 2, anything to docket this evening?
Pass.
Ward 3.
Three items, Mr. President. The first one is a resolution with a tentative title of resolution in regards to the navigation easement in Cedar Swamp Road right-of-way.
Public properties.
Thank you. Docketing, the second one is a resolution in regards to increasing the bond authority for the Warwick Sewer Authority from $7 million to $30 million.
Finance.
Thank you. And the last one is a resolution requesting Rhode Island Airport Corporation install a sound barrier on Strawberry Field Road West as part of their cargo warehouse development.
Intergovernmental. Do you have any additional ones?
No, Mr. President. Thank you.
You may have one more. All set. All set. Ward 4, anything to docket this evening?
Pass.
Ward 5.
Yes, Mr. President. I have one. It's an ordinance. It's on behalf of the administration, and it is an ordinance adopting the Warwick Harbor Management Plan.
Ordinance Committee. Ward 6?
Yes, I have one. It's a resolution requesting the Army Corps of Engineers to dredge Bushneck Cove in the entrance of Warwick Cove across from the sandbar at the Oakland Beach Boat Ramp.
The intergovernmental. Anything else, Councilwoman?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. I have one. It's a resolution, ominous withdrawals. Intergovernmental. Ward 8.
Pass.
Ward 9. There is no more business before us. We will see you next Monday. Good evening, everyone.